Live from the headquarters of Ramsey Solutions, broadcasting from the Pods Moving and Storage Studio, it's The Ramsey Show, where we help people build wealth, do work they love, and create amazing relationships. I'm Ramsey personality George Campbell, joined this hour by the Dr. John Deloney, and we're here to help you take that right next step with your life, with your money, with your mental health, with your relationships, with the boundaries, with your mother-in-law, all of it right here on The Ramsey Show. Let's do this thing. The number to call is 888-825-5225. Michael joins us in Orlando, Florida to kick off this hour. Michael, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you.
What's going on?
Yeah, so basically the question is, should I move in back with my parents to go to school, in a nutshell?
Okay, what's the situation here? Are you doing it to save money, for location, all of it?
Definitely to save money. Location, not really, because it's basically a boot camp, UX, UI design, 3 months if it was full-time. The other option would be for me to continue working what I'm doing, which is a gig economy, Uber, living out of Airbnbs with my girlfriend who works remote, and doing the boot camp part-time, which would take twice the time. But obviously, I wouldn't have the emotional toll of parents.
Yeah, that was my question. What's living with your parents like?
So actually, it's better than actually living with my parents. I'll be blessed enough. It's not as bad as I think. So I'll be living with my girlfriend in Puerto Rico, and their grandparents have a house, which is pretty available. They ask us to live there. We did it before, but there's the issue of my mom, who's been very, very verbally abusive for most of my life, which is why I've been in Florida, not in Puerto Rico.
Okay, I missed that a little bit. So you're thinking about either going to Puerto Rico to live with your girlfriend's grandparents' house, or going to Puerto Rico to live with your mom?
No, to live with my girlfriend's grandparents, because they passed away and they gave the house to her.
So where do your parents come into play?
Well, really having to have their funding, as well as I would have to work for my dad after the boot camp every day. Just having to face them on a daily basis or almost daily basis.
Okay, but let's back that thing up. So you started the call by asking, should you live with your parents to go to college? Now you're saying,
That's what the lady told me to say to you as a question, because the question was a bit more loaded, yeah.
Well, yeah, the whole thing sounds like a mess.
Is this full-time, this school?
It's full-time if I let my dad fund it 40 hours a week, yes.
And it's in-person?
No, it's online, completely remote.
So you can live anywhere?
Technically, yes, but if my dad is funding it, I haven't asked him, but I would assume he would want me to be.
What would it take for you to cash flow this and do this on your terms? Because it sounds like right now there's a lot of handcuffs and red tape and strings attached.
Right. For me to do it on my terms, it would have to do part-time, so 20 hours a week boot camp.
I don't believe you. I don't believe you. Here's why. I did two PhDs and a master's degree working at a full-time job. Probably my full-time job was probably 55 hours a week, maybe 60.
No, yeah, yeah. I didn't get there. I was saying that the boot camp is part-time, but I'll be working a full-time job.
What job are you going to be doing?
I'm waiting to get the results for Amazon delivery driver position, but okay. I also just finished an interview for a remote job as a customer success specialist. I'm waiting for round two. There's two more rounds waiting. So I have those two things lined up, kind of.
So there's either a full-time option or a part-time program, and the part-time is going to take 6 months, and the full-time is going to take 3 months?
Correct.
Do the part-time.
Do the part-time.
And grow up. Listen, the chaos and complexity that you're going to run into, whether it's living in your girlfriend's grandparents' house, and he gave it to her, but she, that mess, or going home to verbally abusive parents that you're going to have to work to, and I'm going to have to depend on them. Like, dude, I don't know why you enter into any of that chaos when for 6 months you're going to have the same thing, and you're going to have 6 months of full-time work experience as well to go on top of this credential that you're going to get.
Correct.
Yeah, so I did. Months, man, 90 days.
Look at it as if there's no other option other than Michael's got to figure this out for himself. He's got to figure out how he's going to survive, live, work, go to school. And if you do it that way, you're going to get real creative real fast.
Right, and that's what I've been doing for now, but I think I've let the voices of my parents get infiltrate, and I feel that I'm starting to doubt, which is why I'm in this call right now.
No, yeah, they've been, how old are you?
I'm 27.
They have been running your life for long enough.
Yeah.
And they've been dragging you around their life long enough. Fair?
Right. 100% fair.
Let's cut the cord, man. Let's cut the cord. Yeah, let's do it.
It might mean it takes you twice as long to get through school. It might mean you work twice as much as you wanted to, but it also means you get to do this your way.
Right.
Exactly. And grow up.
And that gives me great peace.
Yeah. For everybody listening, if you were telling me, hey, I'm going to Texas A&M University and my mom and dad have a fourth room in their house at College Station and I can help with my younger brother who's got special needs and I'm also going to work part-time and should I go home? Absolutely. You got a great relationship with mom and dad. Take it for sure. This is a situation where I don't believe that you'll finish in 3 months living in this toxic, nonsensical mess. I don't think you'll get done.
Okay.
I think you will be about 4 inches taller and you'll be able to bench press, not as much as George, but you'll be able to bench press a little bit more and you will be able to walk into an interview with a credential, 6 months of full-time work experience and a straight back. You see what I'm saying?
Right. And no resentment or any sort of
none.
Emotional toll. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. That's the move I'd make, man.
Yeah. Thanks for the call. Man, there's so much there, John, underneath the surface of the question, which is, hey, I could save money. Right. I can have school funded. But there's so much happening underneath that surface that worries me. And so many people out there back themselves into a corner where they go, well, it's either this or this, and they're both toxic situations, but this is my life, instead of going, there's option C.
And it's almost never either or. Almost never. Sometimes it actually is, and it's scary. And like when you get medical diagnostics and stuff, there's either ors, right? But man, when it comes to I'm 27 years old and I want to get a credential, I got to do this or this. No, you don't. No, you don't. You could work full-time for 1 year and pay cash. There's a million different options here, right? And if he gets a job as an Amazon delivery driver and he loves it, maybe he didn't even go to this program. But whatever. All I have to say is, dude, when you feel yourself either-or'd, backed into a corner, it's always good to call and get some wisdom.
And especially if you're 27 and single, now's the time you're going to look back and go, remember when I was working 50, 60 hours a week while in school? That was crazy. Because there's going to be a time when you got kids and you have other responsibilities and you're landlocked. It's going to be harder to do these things.
Yeah, and he mentioned something. I think it's important. Every extra variable creates more chaos. So, hey, I want to move from my home in Florida to Puerto Rico, live in my girlfriend's grandparents' house. That's three extra variables, dude, that you don't need,
absolutely,
right? Don't create chaos in an already complex situation. Go for the easiest path, even if it's not the most comfortable.
Michael, hang on the line. I want to send you our pal Ken Coleman's book, From Paycheck to Purpose, to help walk you through this entire process and give you some hope. This is The Ramsey Show.
I saw some recent financial statistics, and there was some pretty troubling news. When families were asked how long it would be before they faced financial hardship if a spouse died, nearly one-third said they'd be in trouble immediately. Another 44% said they'd be financially drained within 6 months. People, it does not have to be this way. Term life insurance plans are just plain cheap, and companies have made it even easier by not requiring exams in many cases. There really is no excuse to leave your family in this situation by not having life insurance. This is why I talk about Zander Insurance every day. They're committed to protecting families with the only products that I recommend. And their team keeps the entire process simple and affordable. Go to Zander.com for quick online pricing or call 800-356-4282. This has to be a priority. If your family is in this situation, you need to get this done.
Welcome back to The Ramsey Show. I'm Ramsey personality George Campbell, joined by Dr. John Deloney this hour. And we're taking your calls about money, mental health, relationships, you name it, at 888-825-5225.
Hey, can I just say that was fantastic? I had my volume turned down, so I didn't hear the music coming in. And all of a sudden, I heard you just talking. And I thought, wow, my friend George is losing it.
What it's like to be a professional.
He's losing it. And then I realized, oh, no, he's a professional.
No, we're just live on the air on radio, podcast, YouTube, you name it, John. Get with the times.
Evidently, you have to turn the volume up. All right.
So, John, I have a bone to pick with you. and it involves an article that I received, and I want to get your take on it, because Rachel Cruz and I have covered this issue on Smart Money Happy Hour, and it went gangbusters, and it's all about...
But a bone to pick with me is, like, I did something. Have I done something?
Because I feel like you're gonna try to be a hero on this one. So, that's my thinking.
Let's do it.
So we did an episode called Guilt Tipping, How to Deal with an Absurd Tipping Culture, and it was the tip of the iceberg. Because now, John, according to Wall Street Journal, tipping has come for self-serve checkout. So you and the machine says, money, please. This is wild. So prompts to leave 20% of self-checkout machines at airports, stadiums, cookie shops, cafes across the country are rankling consumers already inundated by the proliferation of tip screens. How many $10 words could this author fit in here?
It is the Wall Street Journal.
And here's the crazy part. Business owners say the automated queues can significantly increase gratuities and boost staff pay.
You know what else could boost staff pay?
Paying them more?
Not cheap bosses and leaders. Ta-da!
Oh, man. And here's a quote from a senior at American University in D.C. They're cutting labor costs by doing self-checkout. So what's the point of asking for a tip, and where is it going? And tipping researchers, I didn't know that was a job, and labor advocates say so-called tip creep is a way for employers to put the onus for the employee to pay onto consumers rather than raising wages themselves. Companies say tips are an optional thanks for a job well done. This is exhausting.
Yeah. So as you were talking, I went from hemorrhoids to I think I've got like some kind of lung disorder.
Oh no!
Yeah, my body's falling apart as I listen to this.
Dysentery.
There's two parts to this, George. One is I love what it says here. It says that the businesses are taking advantage of an opportunity. They are. That's their job. That's what businesses do. They take advantage of opportunities, right? They see a glitch in the matrix and they're like, hey, let's make some money. Fine. I think it is unethical to put the onus of paying your employees on in addition to the product or service that somebody's just purchased, to put that on the purchaser. That's insane. Be a grown-up and pay your employees what they're worth. If you think they've done a job well done, pay them for it. Don't be like, well, I don't know, man. The second thing is I don't lose a second of sleep over this crap because they can do whatever they want. It's on me. And we have a culture that is so sad when somebody makes them feel a certain way. They're making me feel sad at the kiosk. Well, then that's on you, dude. If the kiosk that you have gone and got your own water and put it on a self-checkout and it asks you for a tip and that makes you sad, that's not the business's fault. That's your fault. You need to go to counseling and get friends. And also, don't tweet about it. Just don't do it. And if you stop doing it, it will go away. We have a culture that's so insane.
But if you don't tweet about it, did it even happen?
I don't see. That's just bad philosophy, right? But I'm just not going to lose a second of sleep over.
You're going to love this description. A 26-year-old who works in PR in New York City said the prompt in general is a bit of emotional blackmail.
Oh my gosh! Now
that feels
sure.
Over the top.
This segment is brought to you by Preparation H because I have atomic hemorrhoids now. It is not emotional blackmail. It's a business trying to get more money from you. All you have to do, 26-year-old who works in public relations in New York City, is be an adult.
But hey, jumping in, John, how do you feel about with people when a person turns the screen around and then they ask for a tip? Does that feel more emotional?
It does. It's awkward. It doesn't make me feel like emotional blackmail. It just feels awkward because I'm not giving you 38% tip, right? Now, if it's like my barber or something, that's fine. But if I have to look at some 17-year-old and have this exchange, like, I'm sorry that your boss doesn't pay you very well and they're trying to guilt me into giving you more or just to automate me giving you more, fine. But I don't feel guilty about it. It's not emotional blackmail. Is it awkward? Yeah, it can be awkward. But I'm going to do what I think's right in the situation and move on. By the way,
stand your ground.
One of the biggest disagreements my wife and I have is I overtip. So I'm always overtipping. What this is doing for me is it's making me reconsider.
Going the other way.
Correct.
Well, I don't think that forced gratuity is any kind of generosity.
It's not gratuity.
It's not generosity.
It's not gratuity. It's a cost, right? So either raise the cost of your chicken sandwich by 25 cents or and pay your employees what they're actually worth. Or move on.
I have no shame. I go to the custom tip amount and I do 0.00, enter, while making direct eye contact. It's a flex, John. It's a flex.
It is kind of
can't stand. They turn around, like, I was just going to ask you a few questions. Like, you don't know what the questions are.
Exactly.
You know, good and well.
James, does that make you feel sad and uncomfortable?
James is always sad and uncomfortable.
I'm glad you brought up the question thing, because it is, they act like they don't know what questions it's going to ask.
Well, it's awkward for them, too.
We don't know, right? Exactly. That's like calling your wife and saying, hey, I'm going to be 4 hours late getting home for our date. And she'll be like, I'll have a few questions for you when you get home. And you're driving like, I wonder what they are. You know what they are. You know what they are.
Oh, well, thank you for that. That's exactly how I thought it would go, John. Poorly. Thank you. That was fun.
So why did you think I was trying to be a hero about
Because last time we did this, you're like, I always overtip. Which, again, you use that line.
I do, but I don't do it on demand. I do it because I want to be a person of like generosity. When it becomes a demand, or when it becomes like a...
It loses the joy of giving.
Yeah, dude.
That's good.
Becomes a payment. And I'm not going to buy a $40 chicken sandwich.
We're not falling for it. We're hitting zero. All right, let's get to the calls. William is in Orlando. William, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
How you doing? What's going on?
Doing great. I just had a question. I wanted to know, is it smarter for me to just pay off, well, me and my wife, to pay off our student loan debt on our own? Or I am a school teacher, and I do have, I did hear about the public service forgiveness as a teacher, and I just kind of wanted your expertise on that.
How much do you owe?
I owe 31, and my wife only owes 5.
How much money do you guys have in the bank?
Saved at the moment, probably around 10 grand, and as a teacher, I make around 30, 35.
Okay, so how long would it take for you guys to take 9 grand out of your savings and then use future income to pay this thing off? How many years? Two, max?
I personally believe it can happen in 2.
Yeah, less than 2. What's this public student loan forgiveness program going to take? 10?
Possibly, yeah. I need to be a teacher for 10 years for half of it to get wiped out.
Oh my gosh. So you're going to wait a decade to hope that half gets wiped out, or we can guarantee our own destiny and go, this thing's gone in less than 2 years, and we never look back. And I can choose to work where I want to work. I can choose my own destiny without having to worry about this thing dangling, these golden handcuffs.
How old are you, William?
28, sir.
28. So think about 10 years ago. That was pre-Biden and pre-Trump.
You couldn't smoke, drink, or vote.
Remember how great the world was back then? In 10 years, you know what the world's going to look like? No idea.
Yes, sir.
I'd pay these loans off. And by the way, I've been a teacher. My wife's been a teacher. I know that it's hard when you look at those, that when you get done paying into your union dues and you get done paying into your legal stuff and you get done paying into your teacher retirement, what's left is sometimes paltry. It can be scary. I get that. I know that. I've lived that. Okay. And you put your name on a contract that you told somebody, hey, if you help me get through school, I'll pay you back. And so for me, this is just me, there's an integrity thing. Did I know what I was signing when I was 18? No. Did I run up 6 figures? Yes. And I did sign my name on a piece of paper, said I'll pay you back. And that's the way my wife and I chose to deal with it.
And on top of that, go just look at the data on this thing. People who applied and people who got it. It was 0.5%. Now it's at like a whopping 1% because they made it so much better. Those odds are terrible.
Yeah, it's paid off.
I'm taking control, man. If you want more on this, go watch our documentary, Borrowed Future, where we talk about this issue. We talk about what to do and how we can overcome this crisis. But you'll be there, man, in no time. I had 36 grand. I paid it off in less than 2 years, and you can do the same. Rooting for you.
Guys, it's no secret that the real estate market is weird right now. So go with a mortgage company you can trust to have your back. Churchill Mortgage. Churchill is Ramsey trusted because they're stable, reliable, and focused on you. At a time when a lot of companies are being bought out or going out of business, count on Churchill Mortgage to stick around. They've been doing things the right way for over 30 years, and they'll keep doing them the right way for 30 more. Get started at ChurchillMortgage.com.
This is a paid advertisement. NMLS ID 1591. NMLSConsumerAccess.org. Equal Housing Lender. 1749 Mallory Lane, Suite 100. Brentwood, Tennessee 37027.
This is The Ramsey Show, and if you haven't heard, we're doing something around here that we have never done before. Right now, all of the Ramsey personalities are leading Financial Peace University, including me. And I want you to join my virtual class.
No.
You can do it from anywhere across the country.
Join my class.
It's not a competition, John.
It's
gonna win.
1,000% a competition, America. And Jade and Rachel are killing us.
That's true. That's why it's not a competition, because they're smoking us. There's nothing we can do about it.
I disagree. I'll never say never. We're Prefontaine. Pick one of our classes.
So John is leading a Financial Peace University class. His starts earlier than mine. Mine starts June 20th. You know when yours starts?
That's kind of a flex.
It's the latest one.
Mine starts in a few weeks. Okay. Is yours in the evening or during the lunch
mine
hour?
Mine is during lunch hour.
Mine is too.
Great.
They'll
so have to
choose. You want financial freedom and peace sooner rather than later, join my class.
There's the pitch.
If you want 1 month of just reckless spending before you got to shut it down, you should probably join George's.
Now, that would be fun.
Yes.
All right. Well, here's the deal. You're going to learn everything about how to handle money, how to pay off debt, how to build wealth in Financial Peace University. And we're going to be your personal cheerleaders through the class. And you're going to have a community of thousands of others taking the class with you and encouraging you too. And we're doing all 9 lessons in about 4 or 5 weeks. So we're going to meet twice a week for about 5 weeks. And we're going to knock this thing out just in time for you guys to finish out your summer, have a great fall, and change the way you handle money. The turnaround on this stuff is amazing. People who go through Financial Peace University, they save thousands of dollars, they pay off thousands of dollars, and it's worth every penny you pay for it. So the classes are starting to fill up. Grab your spot right now at fpu.com. That's fpu.com, and sign up for either John or I's class. We'll keep it classy. See what I did there?
Man, that's a good way to end a conversation. We're just going to keep it classy.
Keep it classy, John. Because I was trying to, you know, to rise above it. Take the high road, if you will.
Oh, that's not one of my gifts. I like to get right in the middle of it.
I'm not much of a fighter these days. I don't have it in me. Let's get to the calls. Andrew joins us up next in Kansas City. Andrew, welcome to the show. What's going on with you?
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I wanted, in a nutshell, to ask, how does one pursue an artistic career while trying to find ways to make passive income?
Oh, so there's two opposing things happening here, two opposing goals. Why passive income?
Well, currently the job that I perform right now is not what I would call high paying, and I wanted to find ways to make passive income. And my ultimate goal, you could say desire, would be to get into the creative arts.
What does that mean when you say creative arts?
I'm thinking either acting or writing.
Okay. So you want to be an actor/writer, and you need money right now until you have that career dialed in. Is that right?
Yes, because, yeah, it's a subjective field, and you're only as good as other people think you are. So I'm kind
that's
of
not true.
About that
that's
well.
Actually not true at all. You're as good as you are talented. Now, whether they hire you or not is a different thing. They might hire you. Me and George can both be exceptional actors, but if they're looking for somebody who's dashing and handsome and clearly intelligent looking, they're going to go with George. If they want somebody that looks a little bit rough around the edges, they might go with me. And so that heading into a job in the creative arts, already saying, well, I can't do anything about it, it's just going to be subject. That's not true. Everybody
well,
can sit there.
It's going to be really tough.
Yes. Now, is it going to be a hard road to hoe to make a living doing those two things? 100%. That's not subjectivity. That's just the nature of the market. And then you throw ChatGPT and all that. It's a wild time to be a writer. It's a wild time to be an actor, right? Even the old days of residuals, those are largely gone, and you're just gig to gig to gig. It's a tough life. And for those people that George and I know that do this for a living, they love every second of it. Well, most of the seconds of it, right? So don't go into it already sour, or you won't. You've got to go into it with optimism and joy, and this has to be something that you have to do. Otherwise, it's going to be a tough, tough slog, man.
Right. It just already feels like there's so much stacked against you if you're not already in it. Like,
correct.
You have your foot in the door. You know?
Yes.
It's going to be really hard, regardless. But here's the thing. This idea that I'm going to use passive income as like a launch ramp to this career is the wrong path, because you're seeking out a shortcut that doesn't even exist. Passive income is a myth. We've just all been watching too much TikTok and Instagram if we think we're just going to get all this mailbox money that's going to float our dream jobs. It doesn't work. And so what I would do if I were you is find something that you can sink your teeth into full time that pays more while we get acting gigs on the side and start to work on our writing chops and start to submit those and get into acting and writing groups and improv classes and meet people and interact. That's the only path that I've ever seen actually work.
So let me walk you through a couple of things just so you get the other side of this, okay? George and I aren't actors. We do act like we're friends and we're not. But other than that, we're not actors. But we are on stages. We are in front of video cameras. We're all recording, doing scripts, all that, all day long. We both write. So I remember walking out of the building one day before what I would call a casual shoot the following day with Dave and a couple other personalities. Dave Ramsey and a couple of other personalities who were world-class speakers, been doing this for a decade or so, were on the stage mumbling to themselves, holding a script. They were practicing. They've been on stages of 6, 7, 10,000 people, and they were going to do a small event in front of a couple hundred, and they were up there practicing. Also, George and I both write. We both say, like, hey, would you read this for me? Hey, we need to check something out. We have editors that we work with. Sometimes we join a writer's group that's just based on studying humor so we can be funnier and be more engaging. It's a constant practice, and we're already employed. This is already our job. Some of the greatest actors I know, they took waiter jobs and they practiced different accents with different tables, and they would write a small script and memorize it themselves and go use it with the particular person at the table. They were constantly working on their craft. They were not just sitting around waiting for the craft to come to them, because it won't. Writers write all the stinking time. They write blogs and they write letters and they write journal entries and they write chapters. That's just what they do because that's who they are. If you talk to writers, that's their identity. That's what they do. And so this, you can't wait for it, man. You got to go get it. And like George said, if you get a job driving, practice your acting, practice monologues, practice ideas and talk them into a voice recorder while you're driving, and then type them out at 4:30 in the morning the next morning. That's how you make it. Get a full-time gig, and then in the evening time, go try to get commercials in your local area. I mean, it is hard. Hard. Everybody wants to be an actor. It's a fun life, man. Everybody wants to be on stage. It's a fun life. It's a grueling, hard one, too. See what I'm saying? Like, George, I love that you said that. The whole, I just want to get that passive income thing where they just mail you money. Like, that happened during COVID, and it's not going to happen again.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're ruining your dreams here, man. Like, what are you thinking here?
Well, so I'm thinking that I have an agent, and I started writing some short stories that I just don't know if they're any good or if people would even want to
get
read
a writer's
them
get a writer's group. My wife has a writer's group. I've got a writer's group. I've got people on the side that read my stuff. Yeah, get a writer's group, man. Yeah. They'll tell you.
So I guess my follow-up question would be, for someone who is almost middle-aged and who hasn't had many wins in their professional/personal life, what do you say to someone like that who wants to achieve something but they just feel like they may never do it?
How old are you?
They may never reach it. I'm 37.
Who told you it was too late for you?
That's just kind of how I've...
But if someone at some point said, "Oh, dude, it's too late. You're 37. You'll never make it."
No, not that it's too late, but it's just never.
But there's a lack of belief in Andrew and a lack of confidence. You said, "Nah, my work. No one's gonna even. My work's not great. I don't think I can even do it." There's such a lack of hope, and we want to give you.
I started this job in my 40s. Ken Coleman started his job in his 40s. Now we have years of work leading up to these jobs where we were both writers. He was doing radio stuff. He was doing interviewing. I was doing public speaking all over the place. But we didn't start this job until we were in our 40s.
It's never too late.
It's never, ever, ever too late.
I'm going to hook you up with some resources. Number one is Ken Coleman's book, The Proximity Principle, to get you connected with others in this field and From Paycheck to Purpose to give you some hope that you will get there. And I hope you call us back and let us know how it went, man. Thanks for the call.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Hey, if you're like me at this time of the year, all of the school plays and meetings and invites from everywhere have completely drained your social battery. Or maybe you're like some of my friends who are bursting with energy so much that everyone may be telling you to just chill out a little. If you're having trouble navigating mismatched energy levels, boundaries, or finding people to do life with, it might be time to talk to a therapist. Therapy can be a place to open up with someone who's been trained to listen and walk alongside you and help you find paths through the chaos of mismatched energy levels and more. If you're thinking of starting therapy, try BetterHelp. BetterHelp is completely online and flexible enough to fit your schedule. Just fill out a short questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no extra cost. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Deloney today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Deloney.
Hey, if you're a new listener of The Ramsey Show and you want to dive deeper into the baby steps, some of the lingo we throw out here, baby step 3B, gazelle intensity, go to RamseySolutions.com and click on the Get Started button. It's totally free. We're going to help you figure out the next best step for where you're at in your financial journey today. Go to RamseySolutions.com and click on Get Started. I'm George Campbell, joined by Dr. John Deloney this hour. It's a free call at 888-825-5225, and Jay joins us up next in Chicago. Jay, welcome to the show. What's up?
Hi, thank you for accepting my call.
Sure. What's going on?
So my question is, I was wondering if it is too late to negotiate a medical collection that I already started paying for.
Okay, so this is already in collections. So you weren't paying on it for a while. Collections bought it. What's left on the debt?
So it started at like $3,200, and now it's down to $2,300.
Do you have an agreement with them of how much you're paying each month?
So the thing is, I first got that medical bill when I was like around 19 or 20, and I'm 25 now, so the memory of like how that all got set up is pretty faint now, and I haven't like paid the debt in about 2 years.
Okay, so you haven't touched the thing in 24 months, but before then you were kind of chipping away at it.
Yeah, I was paying a little bit at a time on it, yes.
Have they contacted you in the last 2 years?
Maybe not more than how many times I could count on one hand.
So it sounds like they've kind of given up on this debt.
I suppose.
No!
Well, here's the thing. The longer it's been, the more chance you have of negotiating. I don't think they're just going to wipe it out. It's not going to disappear if you put your head in the sand. So you have to deal with this. But what you can do is call them and say, hey, I'm sorry. I know it's been years. I'm ready to be done with this thing. Here's what I got. I got $500. Would you take that and call the debt good?
Oh, so I have a story about this. So I did send an email about it, which they have a response, so I had to call them. And they did acknowledge that they did receive the email, but they said because of who the creditor was, they weren't allowed to negotiate, due to the fact of who the creditor is.
I've never heard that.
Who's the creditor?
So I've never heard it either, but when I called the creditor, like, it was true.
Okay. Well, either way, you got to pay this thing. If they're not willing to negotiate, I still want it out of my life because it's been looming in yours for a long, long time.
Did you get some medical care done? What did you have done?
So I was in college at the time when I had to go to the hospital for this problem. Mm-hmm. It was some bowel issues and, crazy. It costed, $3,200 to get that resolved. Mm-hmm. And that's all I had done. I just went to go get that checked out.
So can I flip this around and put this in both of your hands at the same time? Is that cool?
Sure.
You're not going to like me, but that's okay. Is that cool? Like, we still be friends?
Go for it.
Just going to a local ER or a doc on the box in the corner, it can be outrageously expensive. Outrageous, insanely expensive, especially if you're a college student and you don't have any other alternatives, right? And if we go back to when you were 18, 19, or 20, you were really sick and you walked in a place and you said, will you help me? And they said, yeah, we will. And was it expensive? Yes. Was it worth what they gave you? I don't know. Who knows? I don't even know what the procedure was, and I don't really want to know. But there's something to be said for, hey, when I needed help, y'all were there. I'll pay my bill. And now I'm 25. I'm 26. This thing's been hanging around forever. It's time for me to just be an adult and say thank you, even though I think what you charged me was 10 times what you actually did. Maybe they gave you a high five and a lollipop and said, go get them, kid. And then they charged you $3,200, right? Who knows what they did? But there's something to be said for, I went and utilized a service. It helped. I'm better. I'm going to pay my bill, even though I don't agree with it. I'm going to be wise and informed moving forward. But let's just pay this thing and get out of our life. Okay. You're going to have a soul tax. You're going to make yourself nuts calling these folks, emailing them, waiting for the response, getting them to call you back. And because their job is to tell you no forever and ever and ever. Amen. Just pay the bill and move on with your life. That's my recommendation. Okay. That's what I would do.
Do you have the money?
Much
just
as that would hurt.
The whole thing off. I can do it, but the thing is, like, I just really don't want to, especially if there's options. But
let's pretend there's no option and you pay what you were billed. Do you have the money?
Yes.
Okay. And some more? Where are you at financially right now? Do you have any other debt?
Just student loans, and that's it. I pay all my bills on time.
Good for you.
What's your income?
I'm sorry?
What's your income now?
Right now, it's about, just for now, it's about maybe $35, $36 a year.
Okay. And you've got more than $2,300 in the bank?
Yes.
You can give it one last college try, but if they say no, just go, all right, I'm ready to pay this thing in full and get it everything in writing.
Yeah, that's the two big rules. Okay. Do not, under any circumstance, give them your checking account number, because they're going to say, just give us your number and we'll direct deposit it or we'll direct draft it. Do not do that. And make sure you get a read receipt in writing. So I would get a money order, go down to a post office, your local bank, get a money order, and I would mail this with a read receipt on it so that you've got proof that they received this thing. And then you're home free. And you might sit at home and be like, Matt, I can't believe you are free. You're finally done with this stuff.
Thank you for the call, Jay. I appreciate it. All right, let's take one more this hour from Nilesh right here locally in Nashville, Tennessee. Nilesh, welcome to the show.
Hey, how are you guys? Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What's going on with you?
So I am 26 years old. I currently work in HR for a company here in Nashville, and I make $55,000 a year. I currently have $35,000 in student loan debt. I recently got into a doctorate program for pharmacy school, and for 4 years, tuition will come up to roughly around $175,000.
What school? What school did you get into?
Lipscomb.
Excellent.
And so my question is, do I pursue a doctorate program with the hopeful outcome of a better salary and better future lifestyle, but will make me go into at most $200,000 in student loan debt, or do I stay where I'm at? Like, I guess, like, for me, I know what my dreams are, I know what my goals are, but then also looking at the real life financial practical side of things, I have to consider, am I just digging myself into a deeper hole, or do I pursue these goals that I've had?
I'll let George talk through the math part of it. Here's what I want to tell you. You and I are both here in Nashville. Lipscomb's program is excellent. Belmont's program is world class. Those are great pharmacy programs, and there's probably several other programs around here. The world needs better pharmacists who are informed, who aren't just pill pushers, who teach people at the counter and care about their patients and clients. We need them, okay? Mm-hmm. And you cannot afford this. It's $175,000.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so I have friends and colleagues at both of those schools. Incredible opportunities. And you can't afford it, man.
I think we need to see what the other options are. And that might mean we wait, we pay off our student loan debt, we start to stack up some cash, we get scholarships. Maybe you're married by then, we have dual income, and we start to be able to cash flow this thing. But right now, going $200,000 into debt, and on the other side, hoping we make enough to pay the bills and get by, and one day pay the student loans off, you're just trading for another burden.
And the tuition is $175,000. But you have living costs for 3 to 4 years. You've got eating costs. You've got all sorts of other things that add up. And students coming out with pharmacy degrees, $250,000, $300,000, $350,000 in the hole is not an anomaly. That's not a weird thing that happens. It's rather common. Yeah. I'd love to see you crank that $30,000 student loan debt out. You only make it $55,000, and so I get things are tight, especially here in Nashville. I mean, it's an expensive place to live.
Mm-hmm.
it may be that jumping to this next thing 4 years from now isn't the right move right this second. And by the way, my mom graduated from her PhD at 57. You have plenty of time, my brother. Plenty of time. Mm-hmm. Just do it the right way. Do it the right way, and don't hinge your entire life on one thing.
Yeah, this doesn't mean your life is over. If you put pause on this thing to do it the right way, move slow, do it when you have the cash, you'll walk into that pharmacy program with a lot more peace.
Yes. Hey, stay on the line. We're going to send you our friends Anthony O'Neill's book, Debt-Free Degree, and he'll help you get there, my friend.
Good call. That puts this hour of The Ramsey Show in the books. Hey, George Camel here. If you love the show and you want a deeper dive on your money journey, we've got a weekly newsletter that gives you helpful articles and tips on following the Ramsey way. Just go to RamseySolutions.com today to sign up for the newsletter. Again, that's RamseySolutions.com to sign up for our weekly newsletter.
Hey, it's James, producer of The Ramsey Show. This episode is over, but check the episode notes for links to products and services you heard about during this episode. Thanks for listening.